From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on WILL Radio and online at will.illinois.edu. Good morning. I'm Celeste Quinn, the producer for the program, Harriet Williamson, our technical director this morning, Kyle Mabry. Today, listeners, we open up the phone lines and the email message folder for questions about diet and nutrition. Our guest is licensed registered dietitian Susan Kundrot of Nutrition on the Move. Today, Susan will share some of her top tips for eating well. She says these ideas are good for the long haul. They're things she says we should do consistently. And Susan, of course, is happy to take any kind of question or comment you have about diet and nutrition. So do join us with a phone call or by email. We look forward to hearing from you. The phone number's in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. Susan Kundrot is a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move. She's been an adjunct lecturer with the University of Illinois Food Science and Human Nutrition Department and the sports dietitian for Illini Athletics. And soon she will leave Illinois for the University of Wisconsin at Milwaukee. 333-9455, 800-222-9455, the email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. But you'll carry the Illini in your heart when you go into Badger Land, right?
That's for sure. I will always be an Illini fan. There's no doubt about it.
Well, congratulations on your new position. You want to tell us just a little bit about it?
Sure. University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, they're starting two new bachelor's programs, one in nutritional sciences, and I will be the new program director for that bachelor's. It's within the kinesiology department, and so there's a strong athletic training education program there, physical therapy and other health sciences, and so I'll be working with those students quite a bit. And then next year, we hope to start a new dietetics program. So I've been fortunate to be able to work with the dietetics program here ever since I came here in 93. And so we'll be hiring some more people and starting a dietetics program with an emphasis area in sports nutrition. So it'll work out really great. So it's my classes will be mainly sports nutrition, wellness, prevention, nutrition communications.
Yeah, I thought that was fascinating because after all these years that we've been together on the show, first on the Afternoon Magazine and then on Focus, you've just done a wonderful job in communication, and you're going to take that interest and that passion with you to Milwaukee, where you'll work with students in broadcasting.
Exactly. It's been great. I mean, I love being a part of the program here, and we've, of course, enjoyed working together so long here. And I actually started out, I mean, my first real job was in radio. So in my little hometown in Iowa, worked for 3 years in high school at the radio station and loved it ever since. So it's great to be able to continue that on. And they have a real interest area in the whole communications and nutrition and working with industry. And so there's a big push right there at the university. So it's just great opportunity that hopefully I can really grow, and hopefully I can do a good job with those students and train them to be sports and wellness dietitians.
And maybe once in a while we'll run into you here in Urbana?
For sure, yeah,
okay.
Definitely.
After 20 years, you got to come back to visit.
You got that right,
You've
yes.
You've got lots of friends here.
Yes.
Well, tell us a little bit about the 10 ways to maximize nutrition. This is your top 10 list. How did you put it together?
Well, it was fun to put together. I thought for our last show it would be great to take a look at the things that perhaps we can do on a really consistent basis that we know make the biggest impact in our health. And we hear so many things about nutrition all the time, right. And it is confusing for people. It's very, very confusing when we hear new studies. So what I want to do is kind of leave everyone with the ideas of, you know, what are the things that we really know will make the biggest difference if most days you're doing these things, most days you're prioritizing nutrition in this way, that we really do have the sound science and studies to back up these things.
Okay. So number one is eating on a schedule.
Yes.
That kind of surprised me, actually. I don't know why it should, but.
Well, a couple reasons eating on a schedule is so important. One is we know that if we're energized throughout the day, everything's easier, right? So we do better in work. We study better. We know kids perform much better in classes in school if they've had a good breakfast and if they're getting a good lunch. And one of our national initiatives and national goals is to help people get more active. And people feel like exercising and feel like being more active if they're well-fueled. And so then we have, certainly we have good data to indicate that most people, if they're eating on a schedule instead of eating one or two big meals during the day, they tend to make better choices. They tend to eat fewer calories overall. They tend to make sure that they're not overeating because mm-hmm. you don't get too hungry. So the other thing that's been coming out of some of the research lately, too, is that if you're, as long as you're eating fairly balanced at those times, you can maintain lean muscle mass better and you can maintain better bone strength. And so all these things that, particularly as we age and as our population ages, those are two key areas. We find people tend to lose a lot of muscle when they get older, and they tend to have problems with bone density or having more problems with osteopenia and osteoporosis. And so I think eating on a schedule and being on that program helps people get the nutrients in, and you have more opportunities to eat better.
So frankly, you have the fuel that your body can use and take advantage to get you through the day.
Exactly.
All right. I like number 10 a lot. Skip to number 10.
Sure.
I think this is so important.
Yes, number 10 is enjoy eating.
Yay.
Which anybody, I mean, through the years, I've had people come in to work with me and be so scared, you know, coming into a registered dietitian. And that's one of the first things I tell people is that, well, that's a whole other part of eating that we have to recognize is that eating should be enjoyable. It should be fun. We should enjoy different foods and different places that we eat and all the things that are great about food, getting together with people with food and enjoying social activities. And so I think if we just look at nutrition without all the other parts that are attached to it, then we're really missing out on the joy of eating. Mm-hmm. And so one of the reasons I became a dietitian in the first place was because I just love to eat. I like food. I like cooking. I find it interesting. Besides the nutrition science part of it, it's just the idea of food to me. It's really interesting.
When you were in school, weren't you an athlete as well? Weren't you in softball, I believe?
Yeah.
So you, I would imagine that you got one eat on a schedule down as a young athlete.
Right.
And then, you know, as you came to understand more about food and the science of food, enjoy eating just, of course, came right along with
it. Right, right. And I think, you know, I was fortunate to grow up in a big family. My father had passed away when the kids were young, and my mom was actually pregnant with me when he passed away. So she raised six kids. Some of them were obviously older. I was the youngest. But part of what we did in our family was we all really had to help out, which was great. And one of my jobs was, because I like food and I like to cook, was once I learned how to cook, I can remember in seventh grade, in seventh grade when we had our cooking classes and home ec and everything, we learned to make a few things. And my mom would joke with me then years later and say, boy, we had plenty of those little pizzas because I love learning to make the little teeny pizzas. And every time she had anybody over, boy, I'd make those pizzas. And people would say, we have to eat those pizzas again. And, of course, no one told me that they were getting tired of them. But then when I was in high school and I was the only kid at home for those last 4 years, we just had a schedule. So one night I would cook, one night she would cook because she taught school. And that was one of the best things that ever could have happened to me because then I learned to make different things. I did some grocery shopping and budgeting and all those things. So luckily I learned a bit about food when I was young. And then by the time I was on my own in an apartment, it was really fun.
And your daughter, Georgia, is she good in the kitchen?
She likes to cook, too. In fact, last weekend we had one of her little friends over, and I told them we were going to do a 10 for 10 challenge because both she and her friend are 10 years old. And so I made them go back in and hide in the bedroom, and then they came back out, and I had 10 different foods laid out in the kitchen. And so their job was to make a complete meal out of those 10 foods. So we called it the 10 for 10 challenge. So we do fun things like that. And so they made the most lovely meal out of these 10 foods and took them about an hour, and I timed them, and we did it kind of like a show. And so we do funny things like that.
You're ready for the Food Network. There.
Yeah, yeah. So she likes food and likes to cook, and so we try to have fun with it at home.
Yeah. Well, let's take another one of these. Well, first, let me reintroduce the program and you, and ask people to join us, because we hope that they will join us around the table, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
This is Focus, and this morning we're talking with Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. And today, Susan is sharing some of her top tips for eating well. But, of course, we want to hear from you as well. Maybe you have some ideas to share with us in that regard, or maybe you have a question or comment you'd like to join us with. Join us with a telephone call or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. will-talk@illinois.edu. Is there one of these tips that you particularly want us to remember? I mean, ten things are, I think we can come away with remembering a lot of these things today. But is there one that you really want to drive home?
Well, I'd say, something that's very practical for people, particularly if they're online, but you can actually get this information too. One of the tips was use the DASH food plan as a sample guide. So a question I get a lot from people is, well, this all sounds great, but what do the diets actually look like, you know, when you're putting these things together? And so there's a program called the DASH food plan, D-A-S-H, Dietary Approaches to Stopping Hypertension, based on studies looking at people who either have high blood pressure or for preventing high blood pressure if they're at high risk for hypertension. And so I've got, and we can have this handout available online, right?
Right.
Or people can send in if they would like a handout.
Mm-hmm.
But the DASH plan gives sample plan based upon a diet that's high in fruits and vegetables, high in non-fat or low-fat dairy, lean protein, relatively low in salt and relatively low in sugar, but they're very good sample plans. And so that was one of my goals, to say, well, if you're really looking for sample plans on how to really eat and pull these foods together, the DASH plan is a great, and it's all free, it's all National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute has put together a lot of great materials that are available, and you can either get them online or they could send them to you as well. So,
okay, let's take a telephone call. This is a listener in Effingham on line one. Good morning.
Good morning. My question concerns my children and I. We all three have ADD, and it's difficult to get the right foods in them. Because they're not hungry, really, until after their medication is worn off, which is evening. And they're teenagers, so at that point they're trying to snack on anything that's going to give them energy again. And I'd like to know what would be good food for people with ADD, and what should we avoid?
Yeah, that's a good question. Sometimes, depending upon the medication, and like you're saying, particularly with ADD medication, that sometimes does really decrease the appetite, but you have more appetite later, like you're mentioning. Part of what you want to do is make sure you have things that are really handy and easy. So, for example, maybe they're not that hungry early in the day, but maybe they would grab a granola bar and a banana, because there's nothing you really have to do with that. You just peel the banana and eat the granola bar. Or maybe have smoothies in the morning, which they don't really have to eat, but they would drink something, because most people are going to be thirsty anyway. And that would be another option too. And I would say at night then, what you're going to, you know, what may be the thing that people want or your kids want is just snacky, grabby type foods. Maybe not going to necessarily sit down to a big meal, but they start getting hungrier and want to snack on food. So I would just try to balance your snacks as much as possible. So it might be that, you know, you've got baby carrots and you've got cheese cubes and crackers, but they're whole grain crackers, and grapes and cut up apple slices instead of just a plain apple. Mm-hmm. So it'd be things that they could grab that maybe if they grab enough of everything, it's a great meal, but it's not necessarily a sit down meal like that. And so I always tell people, I think one of the important things is to make food as easy as eating a candy bar, because we always like to go for something like a Snickers or Milky Way or something like that. That's easy, that's satisfying, that's sweet, And so it's kind of like making things as easy as just grabbing, grabbing that. So even simple things your kids might like, you know, tortillas rolled up with ham and cheese. And we made these the other night for a class for our athletes here at Illinois. You just spread, get a big tortilla, big whole wheat tortilla, and just spread a little bit of even cream cheese on there, and then roll up turkey and some lettuce, maybe tomatoes or a little cheese, and roll that all up and cut it into
like pinwheels.
Yeah, cut it into pinwheels, and you've got just about everything covered then. We did it with spinach, actually, and they were really good, and our athletes loved them. And, you know, something like that, that then they've got pieces as opposed to something big to eat. And that may really help. And on the other hand, I think it's important with the medications, too. You know, the medications may feel like they give them energy, but or kind of calm the energy, you know, depending on what it is. But the food is what's really needed. So even if they're not that hungry, what I would do is make sure they're at least getting, again, a smoothie, a glass of milk, you know, something that's going to at least give them some calories throughout the day. And even sending snacks, if they're not going to eat lunch, maybe send some of these snack items that they could snack on during lunch, just to reinforce how important it is for them to get real fuel throughout the day, too. Because they're going to feel better, they're going to have more energy, they're going to do better in school if they've actually eaten more during the day. Even if they don't feel like it, even a little bit is a help.
Mm-hmm. And anything to avoid?
Well, I think the things that we typically think to be aware of with some of the medications, things like caffeine, not eating a lot of sugar, those kinds of things. So again, we kids especially will go for the sugary things if they don't have other options available, kind of the chips and candy and that kind of stuff. So, you know, maybe a little bit of that's available, but mostly you're having the other things prepared, which means that probably on your end, it's a matter of making sure there's good food at home, making sure there's, you know, they're in a place where they're going to eat them. In other words, you know, a head of cauliflower doesn't do much good, but if it's chopped up and there's a little dip there, well, they're probably going to eat it then.
Right.
And so it takes a little more prep time. But I'd say, you know, focusing on the things that are good, then they're probably naturally going to eat fewer foods that aren't as healthy.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call this morning. Other calls are invited, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Toll free 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. The idea of, I know we did a whole show once on the idea of breakfast and how that really, you know, is the foundation for our day. That's our energy foundation. For kids like this, you mentioned they're not really hungry. Smoothies, yogurts, what else? I don't know if you could get a scrambled egg in them.
Yeah, I mean, a scrambled egg is so great and not that much volume. Too, for a lot of kids, they're just not going to eat that much volume in the morning. But yeah, a scrambled egg with cheese maybe, because then you got a little more calories and a little more protein, and there's some calcium in there. That's where, don't mean to belabor the point of you using these tortillas, but again, you can get those little ones and roll up scrambled egg and cheese, and that you can eat, put a paper towel around it, eat it going out the door. So time-wise, that can be really helpful, or even a
little quesadilla,
exactly. A cheese stick and a banana, again, something like that that's portable, that's easy. And especially if kids are not going to necessarily sit down for breakfast, either not have the time or not want to just sit down. And that's the best thing, because we do know, kind of getting back to that number 10 here of enjoying eating, we do know that if we can relax when we eat, if we can kind of calm down, if we can sit at the table as a whole, you know, a lot of the work that's done here with the Family Resiliency Center, looking at the importance of a family meal and everybody sitting together and
calmly.
And that doesn't, you know, that doesn't always happen, but I think that's really helpful. And I think the other thing about family meals, you know, one of the things parents need to remember too is that that should be a time where you're not really discussing anything that's too stressful on the kids or anybody. So maybe if somebody's in trouble, well, that gets put aside while you sit and eat. Because we really want kids to associate eating with pleasantness. We want them to associate eating with low stress, enjoying the food, not feeling punished, not feeling like things are taken away from them. All those positive effects of eating we're finding really can help kids as they get older and deal with weight issues. And, you know, if we have a good feeling and a positive feeling about food, that makes everything easier for kids.
Okay. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Springfield, Missouri, line one. Hi.
Hi there. I'm a former resident of Champaign and just love your program, so I'm glad to be able to call in. My issue is that my partner and I share meals a great deal, and he is about 10 years younger and is not diabetic. I am. And so he tends to like meals that are more starchy. I tend to look for more meals that are more vegetable. And he's one of those people who has just, ever since childhood, just not been a green vegetable eater. I mean, I've tried some items that have, like, sauces in them, but I'm afraid that I'm just adding fat or butter to things that he doesn't like anyway. So do you have any suggestions for how to make an adult non-vegetable eater into one that enjoys it?
Yeah, well, your question is a very common one, I would say. And I would say, you know, with you and your partner, some of that is figuring out, you know, maybe doing some meal planning together, which may help in terms of saying, okay, what, you know, I might give and take here. I might do a little bit of this here. I think when you have, you know, one person who particularly is diabetic like yourself and you know, yes, you don't need as many of the starchy foods, one thing you could try doing is blending the starch with vegetables. So, for example, he may like it too. If you make, say you make rice or you make brown rice and then your actual meal has maybe a protein, you have a chicken breast, and then you have maybe a one-third rice blended with two-thirds steamed broccoli, say, for example. Or the other night we made a dish that was, it was already one of those packaged meals that was an Uncle Ben's rice, and it says it's rice and broccoli. Well, you know, there's not much broccoli in those. So what I did is I steamed some more broccoli, and I chopped it up, and I put it in with the rice. So even my daughter commented, she said, there's a lot more broccoli in this rice. And I said, yeah. But she liked it fine because the broccoli now had flavor because the rice had just enough, a little bit of butter or cheese sauce or something, and it was still really healthy. But so that might be one thing that you guys can try. You could say, well, what could we mix that we might like together? Because then he may really enjoy the veggies more because they've got more flavoring. But you know that that whole serving, you're still just getting one starch or one carb serving. So it's going to be fine for you. So that might be one thing I would suggest because you can do all kinds of mixes with beans and vegetables or, you know, potatoes and vegetables and things like that when they're mixed together. So that would be one option. The other thing I would consider is things like soups and stews. And, of course, it's getting going to be warmer here. But a lot of people will eat veggies if they're in a different form like that.
So, or a stir fry?
Or a stir fry, for sure. Stir fry is, you know, the ultimate because you can get a little bit of grain, your protein, extra veggies. You can spice it up. You can make it taste really good or put a little peanut sauce or something on. It'd be fine for you to watch with the diabetes, and it'd be great for him as a way to get more veggies in, too. The other thing I would suggest, too, is maybe some of the lower-carb fruits, having those more with meals, too. So, for example, if you know you can eat a little bit more of the things like berries that aren't as high in total carbohydrate or some of the melon or things like that, adding those into the meals where that's good for both of you. And for you, you know that's not necessarily going to be real starchy, which would be a way to add more produce in as well.
I hadn't thought about the rice thing, but you're exactly right. Using things like fresh asparagus and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
The rice, that he wouldn't notice, say, ooh, that's asparagus, because it would be in the rice.
Exactly. And the other thing is maybe roasted vegetables. I don't know if you like those, but, you know, a little olive oil, and maybe you throw in one potato or sweet potato, but then you've got broccoli, cauliflower, onions, asparagus, and that's all roasted together in the oven. And then that's your side dish where you have a little bit of starch, but mainly veggies. Tastes really great. You could throw some garlic on there. You got onions. And so the seasoning can be really good in something like that. And anytime veggies are roasted, they tend to get really sweet. A lot of people really like them roasted when they don't like them plain. So that might be another option too.
How is he on salads?
Good on salads. That's the one place I can get him to eat green stuff. But when it comes to anything like artichokes or Brussels sprouts or anything like this, he just treats it like they're from Mars. And so, but the idea of getting them in small bits or using like frozen mixed vegetables mixed in with rice. That sounds like a great idea.
Well, salads come to mind because if there's just the two of you, you can kind of bulk up your salad with more veggies and his with, I don't know, croutons or something like that.
Right. Another thing maybe to try thinking about these roasted veggies is we've talked before on the show about baked kale, you know, and we made this in a class recently too where we just took a little olive oil. Yeah, a little olive oil, a little apple cider vinegar, and you put that in a big bowl of fresh kale and just bake that at 400 for about 15 or 20 minutes with a little salt, and people tend to love that. But it's just crispy kale, basically, and that might be another option.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling in, and thanks for continuing to be a listener.
That's great.
In Springfield, Missouri. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, if you'd like to join us this morning. 800-222-9455 is our toll-free number, and the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Susan Kundrat is our guest this morning. She's a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move. She's been an adjunct lecturer with the University of Illinois Food Science and Human Nutrition Department and the sports dietitian for Illini Athletics for quite some time now. And if you'd like to join us, do so, 333-9455, 800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. And I think what we'll do here is we'll take a short break.
WILL programming is made possible by Strawberry Fields Natural Food Store, featuring locally grown and organic produce, freshly baked breads, a coffee bar, and bulk foods department. Strawberry Fields also offers natural vitamins, health and beauty products, household cleaning products, pet foods, and an in-store nutritionist to answer questions about healthy eating.
This is Focus. My name is Celeste Quinn. Kyle Mabry, our technical director, the producer for the program, Harriet Williamson. Our guest this morning, Susan Kundrat of Nutrition on the Move. Coming up today in the 11 o'clock hour of the program, David Inge will be in the host's chair, and his guest will be playwright and author Josefina Lopez. She is recognized probably most famously for her play and film, Real Women Have Curves. She was just 19 when she wrote the play, and it tells the story of a teenage girl torn between her desire to go to college and the need to provide for her family. Josefina Lopez, David Inge's guest today in the second hour of the program. Let's take a quick email question now, Susan. Are white cheeses better than yellow? For example, provolone versus cheddar.
Well, sometimes they are in terms of fat. Particularly mozzarella cheese, some provolone cheese. Some of those are made more from skim or low-fat milk. And so we often think that generally we'll say, oh, white cheeses are better. Well, not all of them are, but some of them, like those, tend to be lower in fat. And even mozzarella cheese, you can get a skim milk cheese or a part skim milk cheese, or depends on the package. So you still need to take a look at it and see as far as the packaging. So from a fat content, that's probably where that question comes from, that some of them just are generally lower in fat. For people who love cheese, another thing you can do to just drop the fat down a little bit is to take a good cheese that's really tasty, that you really like, and grate it. So if you grate it yourself very finely, buy a block of it, but grate a little bit, so you might have a couple tablespoons that you can then throw on a salad or throw on something, and you end up, again, not getting many calories, not much fat, but the flavor's so good that for many of us, we like that better simply because you could taste it better. It's really good, but you don't have to have as much of it. So another option in terms of just watching your fat or sodium with cheese is to just not eat that much of it. It's pretty hard when it's in blocks because when you cut off a piece, that you want the whole thing. But if you grate it very finely, that can be helpful.
Okay. The same listener is also asking about trying to replace cola with unsweetened iced tea. Is tea almost as good as plain water?
Yeah. Tea can be a really great help. In fact, that was one of my top tens here, was maximizing your fluids, drinking enough fluids throughout a day. And, you know, kind of going with tea, tea can hydrate you just as much as water can. It has a little caffeine, but probably not going to affect you in terms of hydration very much. And so a couple glasses of tea or cups of tea a day, we know, can be helpful in terms of the antioxidants and the potential benefits. And so it's just a great thing to have. The one caveat I'll say is that some people go overboard with it. If you drank, you know, 6, 8, 10, 12 cups of tea a day, there are components in tea that tend to decrease iron absorption, decrease calcium absorption. So we might then start having trouble with mineral absorption if you drink too much. But 2 or 3, maybe even 4 cups of tea a day or glasses of iced tea, that's great, because I tell my athletes too, I say, if you want a little caffeine to feel like you're getting a little bit of, you know, central nervous system energy, tea's the way to go, because it's not very much, but it's enough. You're probably going to feel like you have a little bit more energy on board without having to use energy drinks or soda or things like that.
Okay, very good. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. No one waiting at the moment. Here's another important one. Bulk up on the body's broom, better known as fiber.
Yeah,
that's a good way to think of it.
It's a good way to think of it. Our bodies need to be cleaned out on a consistent basis. And so eating more fiber, for most people, unless you've got a reason that it's difficult to handle fiber, is a really helpful part of eating well, because we know that foods high in fiber tend to be beneficial in decreasing the risk of heart disease, because a lot of foods high in fiber, like oats and nuts and things like that, may help kind of bind some of those cholesterol products, take them out of the system. We also know that certain cancers may have a reduced chance of getting certain cancers with high fiber diet, you know, particularly cancers of the colon and things. And some studies have shown yes, some studies have shown no. But we know that if we move things through a little bit more consistently with plenty of fiber, plenty of bulk, a lot of fluid, that's just better for the gut. The gut, you know, think about it, it's a muscle, and so we want it to be working.
And this
there.
Is also important for people with diabetes.
Exactly, with diabetes, because more fiber tends to help keep blood sugars down, tends to kind of slow down the digestion and absorption of food, so that can be very helpful. And just the simple fact that most people, if they eat more fiber, they eat more whole grains, fruits, veggies, legumes, things like that, they tend to get full faster. So if we're full faster, from a weight management standpoint, we probably aren't going to eat as much overall. And so that's helpful. I often think back to one of my professors when I was at Minnesota State, where I did my undergraduate degree, and we all thought it was a little crazy, but she had half a can of baked beans every morning for breakfast. She was from the South, and she believed very highly in beans, which I do too now that I'm a dietitian. But so that's what she had every morning for breakfast, and she just swore by it and said that this is the best breakfast food in the world. Well, of course, it was, because high fiber, protein, took a while to digest.
Right.
She didn't get hungry as fast. It worked. So
well, it's funny that, you know, we've been doing this together now for so long, but I knew somebody who had an early morning job. They had to get it to the job very early. And he said to me, I am just dead by 9 o'clock in the morning. And I said, what would Susan say? And I said, well, how do you feel about oatmeal? And he says, oh, I like oatmeal. So next time I see him, he says, that's great. Keeps me going until lunchtime.
Excellent. So, very good.
See, you're helping
spread
people
the word
out. Okay. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Gibson City, line one. Hi.
Hi, good morning. You were talking a bit about energy drinks, and the one thing that I guess see on TV is this 5-hour energy stuff, which I've never tried. It seems kind of scary, but what's in it, and does it work? And if it works, why does it work?
Well, yes, good question. The 5-hour energy, like a lot of those that are similar out there, mainly have caffeine. Most of those, and depending on the product, I think the 5-hour energy, I'm not exactly sure the amount, but I think it's somewhere between 80 and 100 milligrams, something like that, which is very similar to a Red Bull, let's say, for the amount, or a 16-ounce Coke or something like that, or a strong cup of coffee, be very similar amount of caffeine. So mainly it has caffeine, then it has some B vitamins. Well, B vitamins are thought to be helpful with energy. it is true that B vitamins help you digest and utilize calories, but they're not going to give you energy necessarily. So the B vitamins that are added are more, you know, just sort of added because people think it's going to be helpful. So really what you're getting with 5-Hour Energy is you're getting caffeine. I don't know that 5-Hour Energy really lasts 5 hours any different than any other caffeine. Caffeine, when you take it in, actually lasts for several hours. So if you drink something with caffeine, it's not that you're just going to feel a little bit jittery or, mm-hmm. you know, at first. It will last 4, 5, 6 hours mm-hmm. with people. So they may say 5-Hour Energy simply because caffeine lasts for a while. I just put together a list. I didn't bring it in with me, but I'm giving a presentation next week at a state dietetic meeting. And part of what I'm talking about is supplements and how to assess supplements. And so what I did is try to do a review of what's currently out there with caffeinated drinks and beverages and different products and things. And there are products out there now because there are so many things like this 5-Hour Energy. There's so many of the little caffeine shots and the little caffeine gels and all these things that it's very easy to get what would be equivalent to maybe 6-7 cups of strong coffee in one little energy shot. And so we have to be really careful of these now because it may be that, you know, you think it's just, oh, this is caffeine to make me feel better, but it's the same as, say, 8 cups of strong coffee at one time. That's really hard for the body to handle. So there are just all kinds of things that are out there now that were not out there even a year ago. And so I would just say beware. If you really feel like you want some caffeine, I would have a cup of coffee again or iced tea or a soda if you have to or something. But the energy drinks, particularly, and the energy shots and 5-Hour Energy and all that for the price is basically just, you know, same amount of caffeine as a strong cup of coffee.
So it's just a really expensive way to get caffeine into your system.
Yeah, that would be my assessment. I mean, you know, maybe a few of the other things might do something, but as far as the main B vitamins and things like that, I don't think they're going to really have any kind of effect. I think the 5-Hour Energy was a great name. It's really good marketing.
But again, you have to really be careful. And I know that there's been some concern with young people taking in several of these during the course of a day and really being in trouble.
Right. And the thing to remember about any of these caffeinated drinks or, you know, different things that are out there with caffeine is that it's not real energy. I mean, real energy comes from food. Real energy is energy that you digest and break down and gives your cells energy. So this is not energy.
This is a stimulant.
This is a stimulant. It's basically central nervous system stimulation. So to even say it's energy is not really true because it's not.
Thank you very much. That was a very good answer. Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's take another call. This is a listener. Line 2, Savoy. Hi.
Good morning. Very glad that you covered that last point. I was going to raise that, but you did a very thorough job on that. And I will add that if they have enough of those in the day and they do it enough in a row, then they'll have a caffeine headache from withdrawal of caffeine. So it's not they never talk about that either. Now, the questions I really wanted to raise is...
And I'm going to ask you to raise them quickly because we've got a very bad connection. So,
oh, there. Is that any better?
That's better. Okay.
Okay. Now, what I want to say is I had thought that many of the things that your guests talked about used to be covered in high school home ec class, but I know they don't even have geography classes in grade school anymore, so maybe they don't have home ec in high school. But how much of these concepts were adequately covered once upon a time in high school home ec?
Well, I took a lot of the high school foods class. I took everything I could take in high school, you know, between the sciences and any kind of foods class and that kind of stuff. And we didn't get much nutrition. I mean, we got a little bit in seventh grade. I do remember that. And now I know that for some schools in health, they cover nutrition as part of their health curriculum. And so I've gone into several schools around the area and talked about nutrition and sports nutrition. But even in the grade schools, they're covering nutrition as part of health. Sometimes that's part of PE, but often it's health within each classroom that the teachers are covering that. So I think that's great. I mean, I think certainly it's being covered. Is it covered enough? Probably not. But I know that it is being touched upon. And I think when it comes to nutrition, you know, just kids need to have it from all kinds of areas. They need to get it from home. They need to get it from school. They need to hopefully be aware of what's out there in the media and what's appropriate and what's not. But I think we can't stress it enough. I think the one thing that I get very concerned about with kids and people educating about nutrition is, I think, unfortunately, there's a lot of push, you know, with this anti-obesity initiative that, you know, what not to do for kids. You know, don't eat this, don't eat that, don't eat this. And then you see other programs. There was just a spot on WLL the other day I heard on the radio about Carrie Busey School as one of our local schools that have been a part of the Catch program, which is a whole program looking at eating well and adding fruits and vegetables and activity and in a real positive manner. And that was a great story. And so schools have the ability to get these grants and become a Catch school, which takes work on the teachers' parts for sure, but can be really rewarding. So there are those kind of programs going on too in schools now, which is really fantastic because those are very positive messages going out to kids.
Well, I've inherited some of my mother's old cookbooks, and they're so much simpler, straightforward, and they cover a lot of basic concepts. In terms of marketing and these five-hour energy outfits and other things, I have the concern that our country is just getting more into fancy fluff and BS rather than really hitting the nails on the head. But good luck in your travels to Wisconsin, and goodbye. Thank you.
Thanks for the call this morning. We have maybe about 9 minutes left in this portion of the program. If you'd like to talk with Susan Kundrat this morning, if you've got a question about diet, nutrition, give us a call or drop us an email message. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu.
Well, I'd like to make a comment on that listener. One thing that I think is really very true of what he said there at the end was it doesn't have to be that difficult to eat well. It really doesn't have to be all these fancy foods and all these extra things, because if it gets right down to basic eating, that's really important. I know with the work that I've done with our Eastern Illinois Food Bank, you know, one of the big pushes and you know, things that we've done here, which has been really great, is that there's been a real commitment to just trying to get healthier food in for people, because access to good food is one of the big barriers, and particularly with low-income folks. And that's one thing that, you know, just getting back to the basics of, you know, we've gone back to saying, oh, how can we procure more fruits and vegetables?
Mm-hmm.
Just as a basic thing, how can we get more whole grain products? And so there's a real commitment to doing that at a lot of food banks. And I think that kind of goes back to the idea that really, you know, lean proteins, whole grains, more fruits and vegetables. And then one of my goals on this list, too, was to remember your bones. We can't see our bones, but we do have to make sure we're getting plenty of protein and calcium and vitamin D and all these things, and finding foods, because a lot of those foods we find that, you know, calcium intake in general is just not high enough for most people. So it doesn't have to be that difficult. So I would just encourage our listeners, if they feel frustrated sometimes with all the new recommendations and eat this or don't eat this or whatever, stick with the basics, fruits and vegetables, balance your plate with a protein, a grain, a fruit and veggie, try to eat on a schedule, try to eat as minimally processed foods as you can, as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, it's not feasible. That's
mm-hmm.
fine. Have canned fruit, have canned vegetables, frozen vegetables, that's fine. But it doesn't have to be real confusing.
Let's take another call. This is a listener on line one, a cell phone. Good afternoon, or good morning.
Good morning. Could you compare and contrast the nutritional value of potatoes versus rice?
Okay.
Yeah, potatoes versus rice. Potato.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Well, let me start with potatoes. Potatoes actually are a great food. I think potatoes get a bad rap. They're a white food, so some people have stopped eating potatoes and rice because of this whole idea of not eating white food. So that's, in my estimation,
mm-hmm.
not accurate. So potatoes are really high in vitamin C. They're very high in fiber. They're inexpensive. Can you tell I'm Irish? They're easy to cook, you know, all those things. So potatoes themselves are starchy, so they have more calories. So that's the downside. But you don't have to eat a lot of it to get a good benefit. So potatoes probably are one of the world's best foods that we could eat. And they're a great starch food in that way. Rice is also inexpensive, easy to make, so on. Brown rice is a lot better than white rice. White rice is fortified, which is good, has iron and other things added. But brown rice has more fiber, it has more B vitamins. It's, in general, just a really good choice, too. So what I find a lot of people doing is they're having rice or pasta or bread with their meals, and that's the main starches people eat. And so I encourage them. I just talked with a client yesterday about this. I encourage them to eat potatoes or sweet potatoes or corn or peas or these other starches that have a lot more nutrients. And potatoes in general have different phytochemicals, but they also are so high in vitamin C. So I'd say both of these are great foods, especially if it's brown rice. But potatoes would be great to eat just as much as rice or pasta or anything as a starch, simply because of the other nutrients that are found in there. And if you do eat the skin, then that's even better. But even if you don't like the skin, potatoes still have fiber. They have all these other things that are added in. And I just love potatoes for the simple fact that they're really inexpensive and they're easy to cook.
And they taste good.
And they taste good, yeah. Of course.
In our family growing up, we ate potatoes all the time. My parents would buy them by a 100-pound bag at a time and keep them in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we
mm-hmm.
had potatoes one way or another, I think, almost at every meal.
Yeah, yeah. They're great, you know, they're just a really good food.
So here is an email question. Do you have any foods that you can suggest that help to keep the body hydrated as one ages? Do you have any foods that you can suggest that help with muscle inflammation? And what calcium products would you recommend that do not cause constipation?
Mm. Well, let me start with the first question, foods to help with hydration as you get older. Certainly things like soups, stews, again, even smoothies. I think smoothies are great as we get older because the food is, you don't have to chew. It's something that you throw a little, maybe a half cup of frozen fruit, half cup of calcium-fortified orange juice. There's some calcium in an easy-to-digest form. And a half cup of yogurt, which is very easy to digest as far as calcium. So say you have something like that every day at some point during the day. Just throw it in a blender, and all you have to do is drink it. So that makes it easy as far as hydration. Then there are other foods that are just naturally high in fluids, things like salads, grapes, watermelon, even cottage cheese, those kinds of foods that can be helpful. To answer the muscle inflammation question, some of that is, again, staying hydrated, making sure you're getting enough protein throughout the day. Other foods that might be helpful with inflammation are things like fatty fish, salmon, tuna, herring, omega-3 fatty acids, which can be used in a supplemental form if it's appropriate. Looking at things like cherries. There's a lot of studies on dark cherries and black cherries and for being helpful with decreasing inflammation. So fruits and vegetables in general. And then we've talked before about some of the herbs like turmeric and ginger and things like that that may be helpful with inflammation. And as far as calcium supplements, what I would say is, some people do better on something like Tums, because they tend to be easier on the stomach, easy to digest and absorb. The other thing I would suggest is that sometimes the calcium pills are just so big that they're hard to digest. And maybe having half of one or having calcium-fortified foods like the orange juice or, again, yogurt. Or there's yogurts now with double the calcium. There's cereals with calcium in them. So maybe going more to the foods and the juices as your main calcium supplement, basically.
And if you had a cereal that was fortified with calcium, that would also help to with your fiber intake.
Exactly. And a lot of them might have 500 or 600 milligrams. On the label, if you see the percentage, that's actually how many milligrams, because it's out of 1,000 milligrams. So if you see a 50% calcium, that's 500 milligrams. That's about the same as a calcium supplement.
Okay. Let's take another call. This is a listener in Champaign on line one. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a question because a few years ago I heard about restricted caloric intake, and I'm now working with a lot of people who skip lunch and only take in about 600 calories a day. And I'm wondering, is that beneficial or is that crazy? I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
Well, there have been studies on restricted intake and people who tend to eat, say, 500 calories fewer than they need every day, being healthier and, of course, lower body weight and all those kinds of things. And that may be true for some people if it's done in the right way. But again, if you're not eating every 3 or 4 hours, if you're not eating on a schedule, if you're not fueling your body consistently, then we tend to burn lean mass. We tend to burn our muscle tissue. We tend to break down bone tissue and do all those things. So I can't imagine anybody who would be okay on 600 calories a day unless it's some medically supervised program where they're getting other supplementation. So what I would suggest is that, no, that's probably not the way to do it. This idea of eating over time and spreading it out is so important for the body. And a lot of people get by with this when they're young. They say, oh, I'm busy and I'm working hard, but it can catch up to you. And this is a time, particularly in the 20s and 30s, that a lot of people start to gain the body fat and start to not, you know, lose muscle mass and things like that. So if we're looking at the total diet and total activity and all these things, and, you know, most males need at least 2,000 calories. Most females need at least 1,500 calories a day.
Yeah. Well, if you think energy in, energy out, you've got to have something inside in order to keep you going through the day.
Exactly. Even to concentrate. So in terms of work day, people can't concentrate very well if they haven't had fuel.
Okay. Well, last point of the day, I think we'll leave with consume color. How about that? You mentioned cherries.
Excellent. Consume color. And I don't know how many times we've talked about that on the show because it's so true. Looking at your plate, trying to get 3 or 4 different colors at least during the day, making sure that you're, again, having access to fruits and vegetables. That is really one of the goals because that makes it easier. But more color equals more nutrition, and it's also fun to eat.
And it's beautiful.
And it's beautiful.
Okay, there we'll leave it. Susan, thank you so much. It's been an honor and a pleasure to work with you over the years. Thank you so much, and best of luck to you in Milwaukee, and maybe once in a while we'll get you on the phone and we can do a phoner, as we call it here.
That would be great. And thank you so much for the opportunity to work together. It's been wonderful.
Susan Kundrat, she's a sports and wellness nutritionist and president of Nutrition on the Move.